Hey folks, want to talk a little bit about our sponsor for the coaching staff. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, all American used cars and trucks. Had to bring my car in just last week, and Juan Carlos and everybody there took great care of me. They've got some great deals for you folks here, and you're going to want to listen carefully to this. If you're in the Omaha area and you need an oil change, you need to go to Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha. If you go there on Wednesday, it's only $15 for the labor on your oil change. You need to mention a pen and a napkin, but it's only $15 on Wednesdays for the labor for your oil changes. If you need a new set of tires, go to Ruiz Auto, and it is, if you get a set of four tires, they'll take $75 off if you mention a pen and a napkin. And finally, All American Used Cars and Trucks, 144th and I-80 there. If you say a pen and a napkin 2025, if you mention a pen and a napkin 2025, it is $300 off of any used car or truck out at All American Used Cars and Trucks. So if you are in the need of an oil change, if you are in need of a new set of tires, if you are in the need of a nice new to you automobile, you need to go check out Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. Again, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha, or All American Used Cars and Trucks, 144th and I-80 here in Omaha. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, and welcome back, Mr. Tony D. Viss. How are you doing, my friend, after we didn't get to chat last week?
I'm doing all right. I've been putting in some time at the tennis courts. Saturdays usually eat up about 8 hours of the day. We play two competitions, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. We've done that the past two Saturdays. And then today it rained cats and dogs. So I've been indoors primarily and enjoying Easter. How about you?
Well, before I move on to that, you know, I recorded a solo pod last week without you, and you know, even though it went well, I kind of felt like this.
Probably the highest rated pod you've ever heard.
This is kind of the way I felt, I'm going to be honest.
Mess without you. I miss you so damn much. I miss being with you. I miss being near you. I miss your laugh. Yes.
So, yeah, that's kind of the way I felt, buddy.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I do what I can. So, no, we're all good here. Had Easter. Good Easter for the Visses.
I was a little bit different. Usually we have everybody back. And then we had our two youngest daughters came over for supper tonight. So that was good to catch up with them. And went to the 8:15 service. Rita grew up and her church would always do a sunrise service. So this is the closest thing that we had with 8:15. So we did that this morning. But yeah, it was a good Easter. I know you left state, went south on us there. So how are things in Missouri?
Good. We spent the day with our daughter yesterday and spent the night at her place. And then went down to Kansas City and spent some time with my wife's family, and then drove back up I-29 late this afternoon. And now we are ready to roll here with the coaching staff. Speaking of which, 127, Tony, I think we're going to, I think we only have like two more of these left here. So we're going to have to figure out some other gimmick. But, you know, we'll put our two brains together equal one brain and we'll figure something out. So exactly. There goes some 27s. We got some baseballers. I will tell you that. Mike Trout, Vladimir Guerrero. Yeah.
He's not bad too.
Yeah.
By Arby, speaking of.
Yes. Very much so. Let's see here. Carlton Fisk, when he was with the Red Sox, was number 27. Jim Catfish Hunter, Juan Marichal, Got a couple footballers, Eddie George as a running back, and one of my favorite players as a kid, Steve Atwater, defensive back for the Denver Broncos. He was a bad man.
He would knock you out.
Yeah.
Yes, he was. I remember when it was a Christian Okoye that he hit, and nobody would like ever get the best of Christian Okoye. He was a big running back for the Chiefs, and Atwater dropped him. It was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was a bad man coming up from that safety position. So, I've got two basketballers, Tony. Uniforms number 27, both current players, both in the Western Conference.
27, Western Conference, and they're current.
Mm-hmm. One perimeter player, one inside player. One is from France.
Rudy Gobert for the T-Wolves?
Yep, that's one.
Okay.
The other one is one of the most important players in the playoffs. If he plays well, his team has a chance to win a championship. If he doesn't, which he's been really up and down the last couple of years, they don't. Second best player.
They have a chance to win a championship.
Second best player on his team.
Kind of makes me think somebody off the Thunder.
No.
Right. Let's go to the Rockets.
No.
It's definitely not the Lakers because Luka's 77.
Rocky Mountain.
Oh, let's go with the mom.
There it is. Yes. There you go, sir. Yes, and it counts. So, yeah.
If it wasn't your John Denver impression, I never would have got that.
Take me home, country roads. So that song really got popular the last few years again. Like it had a rebirth.
Yeah.
So, all right, Tony, we are going to, and this was Tony's idea, great idea. We are kind of at the time of year where a lot of coaches reassess where they are at. It is kind of the if you will, if there's ever a down period for basketball coaches, especially high school coaches, you would say this time period is probably it. Wouldn't you say that, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, there's some planning going on. You might even be crazy enough to be doing some open gym stuff. But yeah, I mean, right now it's pretty slow. This would be I think this is fair to describe as the downtime because, you know, the summer sometimes, depending upon how you use it, can be almost as busy. You're not doing as much film and scouting reports, but you're playing about as many games, if not more. And then I know you guys do a little bit different than what we do in the fall, but everybody does open gyms and stuff in the fall. But yeah, I think this is probably the slowest time for a high school coach.
So Tony had a really, really good idea to just talk about. We're going to revisit little Don Meyer here, and you never have to ask me twice to revisit some Don Meyer. And Tony thought it'd be a good topic to talk about the five stages of coaching that Coach Meyer, very famous. I mean, you know, Coach Meyer talked about a lot of things very famously, but this is definitely one of the things that he really emphasized. And, you know, when it came down to it, Coach Meyer, a big part of his mission was to look out for other coaches, to help other coaches. And without a doubt, that's influenced a pen and a napkin. And one of the things that Coach Meyer talked about was the five stages of coaching. And I think that if you do this job long enough, I think when you're younger, Tony, wouldn't you look at this list and go, oh, that's not going to be me. I'm always going to be here. I'll never get here or here. But boy, you know, life and coaching has a funny way of changing those perspectives.
Yes. You know, I don't know if, I don't think jaded's necessarily the right word. Maybe it's just being realistic that, you know, I read through this in preparation for this. And Marty, I can tell you I've experienced all five of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I have too. I think we both have, which I think gives us a great perspective to be able to talk about it as intelligently as you and I can talk, which that bar is set pretty low. But You know, I think we do have pretty good perspective between us. So for folks that have never seen this, it doesn't take much to find it here. But the five stages of coaching, according to Coach Meyer, are survival, success, satisfaction, significance, and you're spent. So all of these are kind of starting with S here. And they don't kind of start here. They do start with S. Tony, we met essentially when both of us were in survival mode. I think we can confidently say that back in the day at Coach Finley's camps, I think we were both in that mode, and we were just trying to figure out who we were and how this thing is supposed to work.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, we maybe didn't know what we didn't know at that time. And, you know, you get into a program, you know, I think we were both in our first head coaching position or early on in our careers anyway. And basically what you're trying to do is get yourself established, get your program built, get a culture going. And just one of those things where you're trying to, I guess, establish yourself so that kids want to play for you. You want to build something that kids are proud to be a part of and something that you hope is on the ascent up.
Yeah. And it can be at that point, it can be pretty all encompassing. Like you are so driven to get to the next couple of levels here that, you really don't care kind of what stands in your path, if you will, to a degree. I mean, you know, but I'm going to bust my butt. I'm going to go to the coaches' clinics. I'm going to go work other people's camps. I'm taking what I know and combining with all of these other things. And at the survival point, sometimes you can collect too much information. I think I was at that point as well.
Yeah, Tony. Yeah, the old paralysis by analysis thing, you know, just remembering back, you know, some of the things you talked about, you know, going to coaching clinics and working people's camps. And I didn't know it wasn't probably the best route to go. You know, you mentioned Coach Finley. I just called Bill out of the blue, said, "Hey, my name's Tony Viss. I'm the head coach at Walnut Ridge Academy in Waterloo, Iowa. I would really like to work your camp." And Bill, I was great. I mean, I don't know what I would have done if I was established Division I coach and this yahoo out of nowhere calls me up and says, "Hey, I'm working camp." Like, that's nice, buddy. I don't know. And he put me to work. And you know, is a reference that I go to a lot when I've applied for jobs. I mean, he's been great. I would almost guarantee that two or three of the jobs I've got have been because he stuck his neck out for me and was a reference for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so it just worked really well that way. I called Tony DiCecco and he was at UNI and I did UNI camp. I remember Lisa Bluter was at Drake before she went to Iowa. I went and worked the Drake camp. I worked the Iowa camp. I think Angie Lee was the head coach back then, and just kind of made the circuit and, you know, went to all these clinics and stuff. And like you said, just got a mountain of information, felt like I was drinking out of a fire hydrant and, you know, and the whole practice planning and the scouting. And I remember being overwhelmed, but those were some of the things I can definitely recall from the survival stage.
Yeah. And you know, when you're in that survival stage, you see these things and you get to know people, or you're watching the game. Like another thing I did at the survival stage, and I'm dating my seasoned and experienced state here, Tony. I would record games on the VHS, you know, ESPN, whatever, you know. And basically, you know, those tapes were 6 hours long. So you could fit pretty much three games. And by the end of the basketball season, I would have about 30 tapes filled. And so I'd have about 90 to 100 games taped. And I would just spend my spring and summer, I'd watch about a game a day, just breaking down film, watching it, Here's this. Oh, I like this play. You know, I like this. How's this work here? You know, and so that was another thing that I did in addition to making those blind calls to people like Coach Finley, or I went over and worked Dr. Tom Davis's camp at one point at Iowa. You know, just all sorts of different things. And so I really, you know, you don't know what you don't know. I think that's a great way of saying it about that survival stage. But you know what you want it to look like. The key is you're not really sure how you're supposed to get it there. And I think the same thing, if you're a teacher in the classroom, like for me, I was really lucky. A, my dad was a teacher, but I also had two or three really good social studies teachers when I was a kid. Mr. Haugen and Mr. Vanderfleet, especially. And then a couple of other teachers like Mr. Matuska, giving some shout out to some former Sheldon Orabs out there. But I knew what I wanted my classroom to look like, but how was I going to get at that point? You know, I had this information, but how do you get it there? And I think that's the same, you know, it's kind of the same thing. I know what I want my program to look like, but how do I get it there? And I think the survival mode is also a time period where you make a lot of mistakes, right, Tony?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I kind of look like this. You get thrown in the deep end and you either learn how to swim or you go to the bottom of the pool. And, you know, I guess I'm stubborn enough that I was going to try to figure out the best that I could and figure out my style, you know, what worked for me. And I always had a thing, you know, you were talking about watching game tapes. I just remember, you know, we've talked about this before, Big Monday with the Big East. I loved watching the ACC, you know, Dean Smith and Bobby Kremins and the whole lot. And I was like, you know, those guys are great, Tony, and it's great to like learn things from them, but you still have to be you. And yep. I think that's kind of what you figure out during that survival stage. If you're going to last, is you got to figure out you, because you're not going to be the next Dean Smith. You're not going to be, you know, the next John Thompson or Louis Karnisek or, you know, any of those legends of the game that we grew up watching. You have to be you.
Mm-hmm. Folks, we had a great day on April the 12th at the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. And if you couldn't be there, that stinks. But what's fortunate for you is we taped everything that we did. So if you are interested in ordering any of our clinic videos or all of our clinic videos from our great presenters on April the 12th, it's there for you. All you have to do is DM me on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We've got Andy King talking about 5-on-5 transition and controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer from Iowa State University on player development. We've got Lucas Dollinghouse on coaching through an administrator's eyes. Wade Coulter talking about pressure defense and extending your pressure defense. Raz Vanderloo with a basketball smorgasbord of stuff from Sioux City East High School, USA Basketball, and Jamie Smith from Solon High School, talking about shooting and shooting technique, shooting fundamentals. It's a great lineup, great coaches, great presentations. They're there for you. $10 a piece is all the videos cost. If you want to get all six of them, I'll bundle it together for you. $50 for all six videos. So coaches, if you weren't there, too bad, but because we're thinking ahead here, we've got the videos available for you. Give me a shout out. Let me know if you want to order any or all of the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Spring Clinic Coaches Presentations. Then you have success, Tony. You survive the survival stage and you start having some, or you hope to have some success. And for some people, success comes faster than others. But you start winning more than you're losing. Maybe you're fortunate enough to get to, some state tournaments. Maybe you win some state championships. And this is just a rush, man. You know, you feel like all that hard work that you paid off going to the camps, you know, watching those VHS tapes, going to the coaches' clinics, and you feel like you're kind of putting everything together in a consistent basis. I mean, I still remember my first state tournament as a head coach, and it was, you know, it wasn't just getting to the state tournament. It's how we did it. You know, we had to beat two teams that had been a nemesis of ours, you know, Ron Cotley for a couple of years. And then, you know, South Sioux City, which was the dominant program, probably the best program the state's ever seen. And we had to go through them. And we had geared everything for 3 or 4 years that we have to go right at South Sioux. And I'll never forget, you could still hear it on the film. We were up 10 points with about 30 seconds left to go, and the crowd knows we're going to win. And, you know, but you're still like a nervous wreck. And they hit a shot. They hit a shot with like five or six seconds left to go, but there, and we were still up six, and they called their final timeout, and my girls are celebrating. They're freaking out. I'm like, hey, the game's not over. It's still a 2-possession game. And like, and in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, this is what's going to happen. We're going to screw up and we're going to throw a dumb pass and they're going to catch it and they're going to catch and shoot a three really quick. And then we're going to freak out because the clock's going and blah, blah, blah. And we're going to throw it and they're going to catch a shoot and they're going to hit another three all in 6 seconds. You know, that's where my mind was at, you know, and,
yep.
And obviously it didn't happen. We inbounded the, chucked it long and the kids celebrated. I was so happy for the kids, but I was happy for myself too, you know, because I knew the work that I had put in and I was happy about that success. I was much more happier for the kids, but yeah, I was happy for myself as well because I felt like, okay, all that hard work paid off. Absolutely. Yeah. What about you? I mean, your first state tournament.
Very similar. I mean, I remember when I was at Walnut Ridge, we're really trying to build it, and it took a few years, but we won a conference championship, and you know, we got conference champ shirts, and I think we won it again the next year, if I remember correctly. But we couldn't get as far in the tournament. We ran into a really highly ranked team. Our conference was a small school conference, and we ran into a really highly ranked team and got knocked off by them. And they were the favorite. I think they were a top two, top three team in the state, but our conference wasn't really known for having great basketball. And so sometimes we didn't get the easiest road to state. I remember I went to Hudson, and it was one that we had to build as time went on. And the 1 year we were favored to go to state, we got to the game to go to state, and we lost in heartbreaking fashion. Got upset by a team that shouldn't have beat us, to be honest with you. And it was hard. And I just, you know, as a young coach, having never been in that game before, I had a team to that game, I probably was a bit more nervous than what they were. And I don't know if that, you know, got projected onto them or what the deal was, but we just did not play well in that game. And then the next year, we got lined up with a really, really tough district. We were a highly ranked team, got lined up with, I think we had to beat two top 10 teams in the state to go. And anyway, in the game to go, we were up. It got into overtime. We ended up hitting a shot. We had took the last shot in overtime, hit the shot right before the horn went off to go to the state tournament.
Wow.
And I just remembered I was euphoric. I mean, it was unbelievable. So, so happy for the kids because a lot of those kids were on the team the year before when we got beat, got upset by a team that we should have beat. And this was kind of validation for them too. And just like you said, just really, really happy for them. But yeah, I mean, you have that success, and success breeds success, and you just want to keep experiencing it. But yeah, those same types of things, you know, where as a coach, you know, you kind of go through worst case scenarios, and you know, but you coach to the final horn.
Yep. I didn't know you won on a buzzer beater to go.
The first time, yeah, we beat Garner Hayfield when I was in Hudson. It was great, great feeling. We were undefeated.
I remember that.
Went to the state tournament as the 2 seed and got knocked off by a team that was the 3 seed in the semis.
Yeah. And then you have satisfaction, Tony. The third one is satisfaction here, where you're building a program, you're having success. And this is dangerous, like it says here, because you get complacent, you forget why. And I would say there was a couple of times where I probably took the foot off the pedal a little bit. I don't want to say I got soft or anything like that, but man, we kind of lost our mojo a little bit. And some of that I think was, you know, there's a couple of things that I could have done better, with my coaching. Some of it was, the mix of people that were involved, and you've got to have the right kids and the right players with the right personalities in the right place at the right time. But you also have to keep your guard up. You have to have that fire in the belly. You have to want to, you know, you've got to have that losing still, you know, it can't be all encompassing, but it still has to bother you when you drop games, because you've got to come back and you've got to have that urgency on a daily basis. And sometimes when the grind of the job kind of gets to us, it, you know, sometimes we lose a little bit of that urgency, or sometimes it's hard to maintain success because, well, now everybody wants to be a part of that success. And sometimes that becomes a harder situation to manage as well, Tony. I know I threw a lot out there, but your thoughts on all of that stuff.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of a conversation I was having with our team, the tennis team, this week, where we were talking about, is it easier to get to deuce, or is it easier to win the point after deuce so that you win that particular match? And we came to the conclusion that it was easier to get to deuce, where you get to where it's 40-40, if you will. That next one, even though it's not as many points, it's harder to get to. And that kind of reminds me of what we're talking about here as far as satisfaction, is the fact that it's easier to be the hunter than it is the hunted. And when you're the hunter, you're the aggressor. You're going after it. There's an aggression behind it. And when you're the hunted, you're more kind of on your heels. And I remember reading, I believe it was Mike Krzyzewski's 5-point play, yeah, and he wrote attack and put it all over the locker room. And I was like, that's where you have to stay at. You have to stay in that attack method. You're not defending anything. Mm-hmm. You're going after something. And so that was a really interesting mindset change. I think this was about the same time where Jay Wright was having his first initial success at Villanova, and then he started to get higher rated players, like the 4 and the 5-star players. While before, he was getting kind of those kids from Philly, if you will, a little bit more hard nosed. Yeah, the hard nose, the Burger King All-Americans rather than the McDonald's All-Americans. And, and when he went and got the McDonald's All-Americans, they didn't have as much success because they weren't as hungry.
Yeah.
And that is such an important thing to keep in mind, is that, like I said, it's about aggression. It's about attacking. It's not defending anything. And you don't want to cut corners because, you know, I always tell our kids that success is, if you want to be successful, rent is due every day, and you've got to go and get it. And that's the thing that can become hard in that satisfaction stage, is getting from good to great. Even though distance isn't as far, it's more difficult. It's pushing the rock up the hill.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think in that satisfaction mode, Tony, I think one of the things that unfortunately some players fall into that it's hard for coaches to control, and I don't want to throw like players under the bus per se, but hey, we were good last year, or the class ahead of us was good, we're going to be good too because we practiced against them every day and this, that, and the other thing. And you want them to have confidence, you want them to feel good about themselves, but like you said, rent is due every day, and you can't get satisfied, or you can't rest on the laurels or ride on the coattails of others. You can't do that as a coach. You've got to come in every season. Okay, what does this team need to do to get to where they can be? How can we get this team to max out? And when you become satisfied, when you think, well, we ran Chicago last year, we're going to run Chicago this year because Chicago worked for us. Well, you got 3 different kids running Chicago. It might not work, because they're different players, and I think that's such a hard thing for us to fight. And right now in April and May, we as a coaching community, we have to fight that.
Yeah. It is, like you said, it doesn't always just happen. And I think that's one of the things with being a high school coach that's always interesting, is the fact that, like, as a college coach, you can recruit to a particular style of play.
Yeah.
While as a high school coach, you have to have a system that is definitely more pliable and flexible. Otherwise, you know, if you're still trying to run Kansas high low game and your post guys are 6'2", 6'3", good luck with that. You know, you've got to make sure that you find some what they do. Maybe before you were a half court man to man team, this group's quicker and more athletic. Well, let's pick up the pace and let's go with our press. And, you know, maybe in the, you don't have shooters. Okay. Well, you got to find something, whether it's, you know, the dribble drive motion or whatever, but you got to find something that fits the group that you need to, and make the system fit your talent. Because again, you're a high school coach, you're not a college coach. And so you can't recruit to a particular style of play.
Mm-hmm. The fourth stage is a coach of significance. You know, people associate you with success, your name, you've made a long-term impact at your school or on the basketball community at large. You know, Tony, I think we're both, hopefully this is kind of where we're both at. We've been fortunate. We've, as I told some people earlier this week, the harder you work, the luckier you get. This is where you've got to continue to grind over 10, 15, 20, in our case, 25, 30 years of just grinding at it, having that passion and love for a game. And I think this is the level that all coaches or many coaches want to achieve, is that level of significance in their own way. Like you said, there's only one Coach Wooden, there's only one Krzyzewski, there's only one Ariema, there's only one Tara Vanderveer. But can you be significant within your program? Can you be significant with others? Maybe you're at two or three different programs, but what is your significant statement that you can make in the game? What imprint can you make in kids, in programs, in the game at large, in the area that you're at?
Yeah, you know, this one's kind of a fun stage. You know, I was fortunate enough a handful of years ago to be inducted into the IGCA Coaches Hall of Fame. And, you know, so that was a huge honor. But I'm going to be honest with you, next weekend, one of my former players is getting married, and my wife and I are invited to that. That means more to me.
Yep.
I mean, and I say that, and I mean, you could put a lie detector thing on me. You could be whatever. No, Tony, you're kidding. No, I'm not kidding. That is way more. But being invited to players' weddings, I still have a handful of players, 5 to 10 players that send me Christmas cards every year. I love it because I read those things to figure out, you know, watch their families grow and the big life events and stuff like that. That to me is what we're talking about here, Marty, in terms of the significant side of it. Is, did you speak greatness into their life? Do you have a, you know, a relationship with them still? You know, I love the one time you told me, you know, you were talking to your players, you know, this isn't a 4-year relationship. I'm hoping this is a 30, 40 year relationship. And that is so very, very true.
Yeah. Yeah. That window into the 40 year relationship is probably closing a little bit. If we still have a 40 year relationship, but I'm going to be really old, which I'll take. I mean, I'll take it, you know. So my great grandma lived to be 100. So you never know, Tony. So
never know. You got good wounds, Tom.
Yeah, I'm trying. So the last phase is when you are literally and figuratively spent. You just don't have anything left. Sometimes it's a change of scenery. Maybe you need to step away from coaching. It's a grind. The grind can become tough. You don't enjoy that stuff, you know. And there's a certain craziness that you have that you go, okay, I just coached this game and now I just got home, and for the next 2 hours I'm going to rewatch it and take a bunch of notes and figure out what we need to do to get us ready for practice tomorrow so that we can get better based off of this. I mean, that's a grind, and you have to enjoy that. And when you stop enjoying or when that part of the job is no longer enjoyable, that's when you're probably at that spent time period. And it's pretty much, I would say, Tony, it's inevitable for everybody. You know, sometimes you're in a situation where maybe it's not you that's spent, but the circumstances around your situation it's best to walk away from it, or, you know, different things like that. There's a lot of different ways to be spent other than what immediately comes to mind, which is the guy or gal that just doesn't want to do the job any further.
You know, I've been there a few different times. You know, I've been there in terms of kind of like what you're talking about, the stress and just not enjoying it and needing a change of scenery. I've been spent that way. And to be honest with you, I think I'm feeling it again right now. Not the stress part of it, but like the grind, you know. And John and I talked a lot this past few weeks. I thought about being done and calling it good. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was just, I told him, you know, John, when I'm here, like when I'm coaching practice, when I'm coaching a game, you get me. Like I'm here, I'm in it to win it, just like what I have been for the last 30 plus years. But it's when I get in my car and I drive home, I'm like, I don't know if I'd rather be doing something else. I would just be honest. I have a number of grandkids. The oldest one is getting into that middle school area, and yeah. We live 2 hours away, so I probably can't catch some of the right after school things. But when he gets into high school, you know, I've watched enough of other people's kids and I've loved it. Don't get me wrong. This isn't sour grapes, but I want to be there to watch him, and I want to be there to watch his siblings, and I want to be there to watch his cousins, with Brianna's kids. And so I want to do that. And so I know I'm at 1 to 3 years left, and you know, it'll be time, and that's okay. You know, because this time, not that the other one wasn't on my terms, because I left under my own accord. It wasn't forced out. I left under my own accord.
Same.
But this one will definitely be like, hey, I fought the good fight. I've done it for 3+ decades, and it's time for a younger man or a younger woman or whoever to do this. But yeah, I can see the finish line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, we see it where, you know, like Larry Bird very famously said, you know, he was only a head coach for 3 years because he felt like a coach's voice, you know, started to get tuned out after 3 seasons. And I think there's some truth to that, Tony. I think that, after 3 or, you know, at the most 4 seasons, it's time to move on and to hear somebody else. And I think you need to recognize that. I think that's one of the things I've really changed about my own coaching style is I really have tried to turn more and more things over to my assistant coaches so that my voice isn't as dominant. And they're not hearing my voice the whole time. And hopefully that 3 seasons that they may be with me might be stretched a little bit longer, you know, and it'll be more positive in that way. Yeah, you know, Father, I think you've said it before on the pod, Tony, you know, Father Time is undefeated. Father Time is undefeated, and he gets the best of us. You know, you think guys like Nick Saban, we're going to coach forever. But he was like, no, I'm good. You know, I'm ready to move on. And sometimes you just have to listen. And I think, Tony, we've both been there. You know when it's time to step away from that particular position or that particular situation, right?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, the signs are there. Sometimes you just got to be willing to listen to them and you know, go at the time, because you know what, the one thing that you'll always understand is that when it becomes where it's a job and you're not having fun, it's time, you know, whether it's time to take a different job. You know, I mentioned Tony DiCecco earlier. I consider him one of my mentors, and you know, he said if he had to do it over again, he would change jobs every so often because of what you're talking about. And I just thought that was very insightful on his part. And there comes to a point in time too, where, you know, it might be a job change. And sometimes you just get to the age. I mean, this is I'm not trying to be whatever. This is a young man's job. It is. And, you know, you take a look at like the guys that have stepped down in the ACC just recently, Coach K, Tony Bennett, Jim Larrañaga, Father Time's undefeated.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the great examples of this, Tony, is Buzz Williams. You take a look here. He was at Marquette from 2008 to 2014, and then he leaves to go to Virginia Tech. Why would you leave Marquette to go to Virginia Tech? But he'd been there 6 years. And then he goes from Marquette to Virginia Tech. He's there for 5 years, turns it around. It's like, oh, you finally got it. Hey, time to enjoy it. Nope, time to move on to Texas A&M. And he's at Texas A&M for 6 years. And, you know, they've had a couple of really nice years the last couple of years. Did they make the Sweet 16 this year? I can't remember if they made it to second or third round this year.
I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's close. And then he's like, nope, time to move on to Maryland, you know? And I think, and again, he's dealing in a tax bracket that most of us are not in. And I completely understand that. But I think that it's a really, really smart way to look at things. I think that you can stay at a job too long. And some people are able to navigate that for a long, long period of time. But it's getting harder and harder to be the Dean Smith, Mike Krzyzewski, staying at a place for 25, 30, 35 years. It's really, really hard to do that. Even at the high school level, it's really, really hard to do that.
Those guys that do it, legendary, it's special. But is it becoming more and more rare? I mean, all you got to do is hop onto X and you can read about this very, very successful high school coach that has stepped down, this very successful high school coach that was forced out, you know. And I just think it's one of those things, whether it's dealing with NIL at the college area, or whether it's dealing with parents at the high school level, those issues, those warts, if you will, are becoming bigger and bigger. And that's why you don't see the career longevity that we have seen from some of the legends in the game a few decades ago.
Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp. It's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to The Last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Well, Tony, you know who is legendary, who is special, and who is rare.
Europe.
I've been telling Tony I've got a good one this week, and I feel really, really good about it. Tony, are you ready for this week's trivia question, my friend?
It's a good question. I've been waiting for it. I'm going to get it wrong, but I'm waiting to see what we got here.
Paige Beckers, Monday night, Paige Beckers was the number one draft pick in the WNBA draft, and deservedly so. Really simple question, Tony. Of course, Paige Beckers went to college at the University of Connecticut. Paige Beckers becomes the blank UConn Husky to be drafted number one by the WNBA.
Well, that's a really good question. Because obviously you've got Tarazi, you've got Breonna Stewart, Maya Moore. I'm going to go with five.
That is incorrect.
I need to go higher or lower?
You need to go higher.
Let's go seven.
You are incorrect.
Higher or lower?
You need to go lower. So
I'm going to go six.
Yes, and it counts on the third attempt. Tony Davis nails it. Yes. You got Tarazi. You got Maya Moore. You got Stewie. Obviously, you got Paige. Tina Charles in 2010. And the first one was Sue Bird.
I was trying to remember if Sue went one or two, but yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, yes. And I would say when Paige Beckers was drafted number one the other night, Mel Allen probably said, so let's talk a little WNBA draft here, Tony. You know, obviously predictable with number one with Paige. You know, but then after that, there was some intrigue here. The Mystics had like half of the first round, you know, and Dominique Malonga drafted number two overall. A lot of people think she might be the female version of Wemby. And I tell you, it's hard not to see it. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
She dunks really easy. I think Paige is going to have a great career. Don't take this the wrong way. But if you were to say, I don't know, 10 years down the road that Malonga had the best WNBA career, I would not be shocked by that. She's 6'6", dunks it easy. Looks like she shoots the three pretty well as far as like she has good shooting form.
Yeah.
Percentage will go up as time goes on. But man, I mean, that's kind of a nice consolation prize because it seemed like for a while, you know, whether it was, I'm trying to remember, I think it was Olivia Miles ended up wanting to stay in college. Yep. Trying to think, there was about two others that had been projected to go ahead of her and they all decided to stay Azzie Fudd. And I can't think of the third one right now. And they all chose to go back because again, you take a look at salary, WNBA, it's like 170 some thousand, if I remember correctly, for a first year player. Mm-hmm. Well, if you stay in college, some of them are making over $1 million. Yeah. And so that to me is kind of a no brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the WNBA is might have to look at their salary structure and see where the, you know, and the union is going to fight for those things, especially after the boom of last year. And if they pick up and exceed from last year to this next year, you got to figure, you know, like for example, Indiana's probably going to be better. And if they're better, that means Caitlin's going to be on TV more. And, you know, that's where a lot of this stuff starts and ends is with her, you know, and say what you want. I mean, but I think that's, you know, most of the empirical evidence says that's the reason why we are where we are in a lot of ways here. So, but yeah, you know, you got that. The Mystics took three of the first six. I was really surprised they took Georgia Amore with the sixth mm-hmm. pick. I like the Citron girl from Notre Dame and the Irefian from USC. excuse me, Tony, but I was really surprised that they went with her, especially with Anisha Murrow sitting there for her. I thought she would go fifth to Golden State, but she slid down to seven and went to Connecticut. I think that's a huge pickup for Connecticut. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a really big pickup. I know a lot of people, because if you go and take a look, Angel Reese went seven. And so she was runner up for Rookie of the Year. And a lot of people are talking about they could see Morrow being kind of the runner up to Beckers this year, and kind of history repeating itself that way. But I thought she would go fifth as well. You know, one of the things they were worried about was her outside shot. But if you go back to when she was at DePaul, she shot the three really, really well. She just wasn't asked to do it as much at LSU. And so I think that's something that you could see her getting back to.
Mm-hmm. Few other highlights here. I really like the Rivers gal from NC State, also going to Connecticut at eight. I think she's got a chance to be really good. Haley Van Lith, going to Chicago, teaming up with her teammate of one season at LSU in Angel Reese. Sarah Ashley Barker from Alabama, she's the gal, just went, I was watching the game where she played against Maryland. It just went nuts in the tournament, had like 43. They couldn't guard her. They were throwing the kitchen sink at her. In the second round, again, so it's kind of some of the big names here. Tahina Papau of South Carolina going to Atlanta. A little local flavor here. Lucy Olson of Iowa going to the Mystics as well. It's a good draft. I don't think it's as deep of a draft as we had last year, but there's some really, really good players, especially in the first round, that are going to make some impact on the league.
Yeah, and it was more players from outside the United States were drafted early than what we normally see.
Yeah.
You know, and so you kind of see the NBA fingerprint there, because that's kind of the way the NBA draft has gone as well. But yeah, there were some players there. There might be a little bit more development that needs to happen than maybe the year before. And with some of those players pulling out that we mentioned earlier, this draft also had the potential to be really, really good. But at the same time, I just think that NIL is going to continue to make the college product healthy, because you can go get paid more money there. And so you can stay in college, and those teams will be a lot of fun to watch. And like we've talked about with the parity and stuff before, I think that's a good thing for women's basketball.
Yep. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Let's talk a little NBA playoffs, Tony. We are taping this. It is Sunday night. It's about 9:15. Tony's got to get some beauty sleep here in a little bit. It's been a busy weekend. Some good games, some not so good games. I think probably a lot of people are going to point at the Timberwolves beating the Lakers last night as a big upset. To me, I didn't really see. I think Minnesota is playing really, really well right now, and I'm surprised a little bit by the margin of victory, but I'm not surprised that they went into Los Angeles and got a win out of the first two games. Denver with a big win yesterday in overtime. Russell Westbrook kind of saving their bacon a little bit. Indiana dominating over Milwaukee. Memphis getting blitzed today. blitz doesn't even begin to describe it, I don't think. 51-point loss in game one. But hey, it's a good thing they fired the coach. sorry. Was that sarcasm, Sheldon Cooper?
It was.
Yeah. You know, Boston and Cleveland cruising, and then Golden State and Houston are playing right now as we're talking here. So, Tony, kind of some of your observations on some of the stuff that you've had a chance to see when it comes to the playoffs.
You know, I go back to what you said with Minnesota. The West was so tightly stacked after you got past Houston between 3 through 10. I mean, you could have thrown a blanket and got all those teams. And so for a lot of those teams, they've been playing playoff games, if you will, already. Yeah. And it's one of those things where I don't know with the professional game, if the higher seed is tremendously important. I think you just want to get in and be playing well at the right time. And that's Minnesota in a nutshell. I think they played the long game where they kind of messed around with some things to see what would fit their personnel with losing Kat and then bringing in Julius Randle and DiVincenzo and so on and so forth. But that's a young, hungry team, and they've got a budding superstar with Anthony Edwards. And, you know, the Lakers a little long in the tooth. And then the other thing with the Lakers as well, they're kind of like a donut. They have a hole in the middle.
Yeah.
And when Jackson Hayes doesn't rebound, you can't play him. And when you go small, that plays right into the hands of the T-Wolves. And I see the T-Wolves winning that series in 5 or 6, to be honest with you. And then Sony put out a really neat thing on X today where they said if you lose a playoff game by 50 points, the series should be over. So I seconded that, and I haven't heard if anybody's, you know, we didn't do Robert Rules of Order or anything like that, but I think they're still going to make Memphis show up and play game two in a couple days here.
Yeah, I think they're going to be contractually obligated to do that, you know, so yeah. And you know, in this route, you know, Ant, I don't want to say only, but only played 35 minutes and only had 22 points. So it wasn't like he had 40 and they just couldn't stop him and he went nuts. You know, Jaden McDaniels went kind of a little bit nuts. He went, you know, had 25, went 3 for 3 from the 3-point line. But you're right, Tony. I think, you know, they were only separated by one game. So it's, you know, the Lakers finished with 50 wins and Minnesota finished with 49. It wasn't like there was this gulf between them that it was just insurmountable. These teams are essentially even based on what they did in the regular season here. So, you know, game two is going to be hotly, hotly contested here. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited to see it. I think that series and the Golden State, I think the three middle series in the West have a chance to be the three best series of the opening round, with Golden State, Houston, the one we just talked about, and then Denver and the Clippers. This could be an all-timer, seven games of just a slugfest.
Yes, and somebody put a proposal out there on X yesterday, too, to make that a 9-game series.
Again, I don't think they're going to go for that, but that's just...
You never know.
Yeah.
It's about ratings. The ratings are down. They might get the ratings fixed.
Yeah. I think the West is just going to be... it's going to be crazy. I think Indiana is playing, and obviously Milwaukee is hurt because Lillard is out and he's got the deep vein thrombosis, you know, so he's struggling with that. So that kind of, I think Indiana's better anyway, but that doesn't help the Bucks' chances in any way, shape, or form. And what has had a chance to be the most competitive series, I could see Indiana winning that in 5 games.
They talk like he's healing quickly, and again, you never know what to believe what you read out there, but they're talking that he may be back for game two. Now, you haven't played for a while. I still think Indiana's going to get him in 5 or 6, but that would be a big piece if they could. But poor Kyle Kuzma, that was rough.
Yeah. The Kuz, I'm looking his stuff up here. Where'd he go? Where'd Kuzma go?
Oh, that's the same question the Bucks were asking yesterday.
uh, That was a good basketball joke, Tony.
I'm here for you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Dad jokes, basketball jokes. I got them.
Yeah, dad jokes, basketball jokes. Huh? Yeah, 0 points for the Cougs, minus 24 in 22 minutes. Yeah, not a good day. So, Tony, I would like to say, I would like to say this. And I would like to kind of going back to the playoffs here. I, as mentioned before, I am really, really up on the Minnesota Timberwolves. That would be who I'm up on. Again, just playing really, really good ball at the end of the season. Dominant win. Again, not surprised that they won, Tony. Surprised how dominant they were. And I think they're just going to present a lot of problems for the Lakers. So that's who I'm up on this week. How about you?
You have to be careful because it's a one game and we've been dumping on Memphis. But I don't know if I see anybody out west taking out Oklahoma City. The way they played today, I mean, you go back and you talked about the fact, well, Ant had 22 or whatever it was. Shea didn't have that many either. I mean, compared to what he can do, like he can put up 40, 50, whatever. He had low 20s as well. They had some other players step up in a big, big way. And the way they fly around and play defense, I think the Oklahoma City Thunder, that's the stock I want to buy.
Here's a little something for you, Tony. They won by 51 today. The most that any one individual player played in minutes today were two guys, Jalen Williams and Aaron Wiggins off the bench. They each played 26 minutes. That was the most that anybody played for Oklahoma City. Holmgren only played 21. Shea only played, he didn't even play half the game. He played 23 minutes. Hartenstein played 21. Kayson Wallace only played 13. He played 13 minutes. Kayson Wallace played 13 minutes, and he was a plus 30 and a plus minus. Alex Caruso, who didn't score in his 12 minutes, was also plus 30. Jalen Williams was plus 44 in his 26 minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's pretty good math there. So I am down, Tony, on the Phoenix Suns. It is it's not a dumpster fire. It's not it is like Vesuvius explosion, fire, lock, liquid lava, liquid hot magma, anything that you could think of, it's there. It is just a mess. We were kind of talking off of the recording here. Matt Ishbia might be giving a Steinbrenner-esque vibes. Now he's got to go for another 30 years or so before we really put him in that. But this is, as Bill Simmons would say, new owner syndrome. I think he's got a massive case of that, and this franchise is destined for a long few years, I think.
Because you've got Frank Vogel, Monty Williams, obviously you got Mike Budenholzer, and I'm probably missing one, to be honest with you, but it's like a revolving door, and they're there for one season.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. I mean, there are knee-jerk reactions, and this is like knee-jerk reaction on steroids. And so I also would jump into that boat. Bud won a title. Vogel won a title. Monty Williams has been, I want to say, multiple-time NBA Coach of the Year.
Yep.
And I don't get the rhyme and the reason. Now, if you say gave them three seasons and one guy kept with all the results, I could understand one, but it's a revolving door. And yeah, the Suns, it's a laughing stock. You're probably going to move Durant in the offseason. That's kind of what the rumor mill is going. And I get that, but you're not going to get a whole lot for him. No. I mean, GMs are pretty intelligent. Obviously, he's a short-term rental. You've got a few seasons left at the most, and you're not going to get the return. So then are you going to move on to your most valuable piece, which would be Devin Booker? And if you do that, what are you going to get? Is it just complete reset mode? I don't know, but this guy will probably try all of the above.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you don't really want to trade Booker because I think he's only 28 or 29. I could be wrong with that, Tony. But, you know, he's not 30 yet. I do know that. So, you know, here's your most valuable piece. But how long is he going to say, I want to stick around? I mean, I love Phoenix, but, you know, I can only stay here for so long, you know. And, you know, Bradley Beal's got the, I mean, they made the knee jerk, again, you said knee jerk reaction. I think it's a great comparison there. You know, that was a knee jerk reaction to get Bradley Beal and his no trade clause, you know? So, I mean, it's not good. It's really, really not good. And it's really because Phoenix has some of the best fans in the NBA. It's a franchise that it's probably the most successful franchise that has never won an NBA championship. And, you know, but it's just a mess. And now they don't have any draft picks. Now, again, I'm sure their calculus is, well, if we trade Durant, we're going to get a bunch of draft picks back. Well, are you at this point? I mean, you know, let's say you're Houston. How much do you really need to give up? Let's say Houston wanted to trade for Kevin Durant. You can sit there and go, we just won 50-some games with these dudes. We don't really need Kevin Durant. We'd like to have him, but we're not going to give the house away for Kevin Durant. Like you had talked about before we got going, they're not going to make the Herschel Walker deal, you know, type of a deal. And so I think Phoenix is just... It's just really bad. So that's who I'm really, really down on this week. And I'm not saying, you know, I think there were some personality situations or issues with Monty Williams at the end. Obviously, I think there were some personality situations with Bud. But at the same time, you know, if you keep having personality issues, where are those personality issues coming from? It can't always be the coach's fault, you know. And again, Kevin Durant is unbelievably awesome, but man, he's had some ugly exits on the last two or three franchises that he's been on as well, Tony. So, you know, that's something to think about there. So,
yeah, definitely have to weigh all that stuff as you decide because. You know, like you said, if you bring him into Houston, this young core, and I get they've got some adults there with Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks and guys like that, but who's to say that Durant doesn't mess up your chemistry? Because I think one of the things that's tough about Houston is you have to guard all of those guys. And if the Thompson kid has to be into any type of trade with Durant or Jalen Green, I think you steer away from that. I really do. And it might just be, you know, like what we've talked about before with like Denver, you know, before, you know, when they won the title was Jamal Murray, you had Jokic, and you had three guys who were stars in their roles. And, you know, I don't know if you try to go out and recreate a big three, big four type thing, get the big two, let them eat, so to speak, and then put some role guys around them that are stars in their role.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So you got anybody you're down on, buddy?
I would jump in on Phoenix with you, but the other one, obviously the low-hanging fruit here would be Memphis. But you got to give Memphis a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. You know, they got beat in their first game,
yeah.
Had to win the next one. They got in. It was their third game in a short amount of time, yeah. And they went with, you know, their fired their coach, like you said earlier. I don't know if Taylor Jenkins was the problem. You probably see him on a different sideline next year, proving that he wasn't. But that might be my other one, would be Memphis. You know, you make that and you get in the playoffs by the skin of your teeth, and then you just get flat out embarrassed today.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling my wife as we were kind of watching, like, oh, well, look at how is this team even in the, hey, huge emotional game on Friday night, turn around on Sunday, basically Sunday morning. And that's tough to do. And Oklahoma City has had a week off. They're primed and ready, fresh as a daisy. it's not surprising that this, I mean, maybe it was uglier than what we thought it was going to be, but it's not surprising that it was ugly when you kind of think about it from that perspective. I'm guessing game two will be much more, you know, it will be more competitive, hard not to be more competitive, but it'll probably be more competitive. But I still think, like you said, Tony, I think Oklahoma City, it's going to be over pretty quickly in that 1-8 there. So,
yeah, that'll be a 40 even.
Yep. Yep. So episode 127 in the books here, 5 stages of coaching. Tony, anything to add here at the end?
Yeah, I mean, just take time as a coach, evaluate where you are in those stages, and then, you know, continue to learn and continue to grow. And that's what I think you've done such a great job here with providing resources for coaches with your pen and a napkin empire that you have.
Empire might be a little bit of a stretch there. So, but I appreciate the sentiment though, my friend. Yeah, I agree. You know, take some time. Now's the time to take some time, recharge, get your battery going here. And one of the great ways you can do that is by, checking out the things that we have here at A Pen and a Napkin. We had our clinic videos, all that fun stuff there. So, really good stuff here. Tony and I will be back next week. We'll be talking about something. We'll figure something out. And yeah, we'll just let it rip. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.